Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, what's behind the incredible run-up in Bitcoin over the past week or so? Is it time for average investors to jump on the cryptocurrency bandwagon? Also this morning, Mayor Christina Mern recaps last week's State of the City address and shares her reaction to the Findlay decade of economic development success. In case you missed it last night, we have highlights from our forum ahead of the March primary featuring the candidates for Hancock County Commissioner. And we have what you need to elevate your diet and wellness routines for National Nutrition Month. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. You know, we have gotten this early taste of spring. Spring technically isn't here yet. We're in meteorological spring, but the calendar says we have a little bit of time yet. But even though winter is sort of on its way out, the influenza virus seems to be hanging around in Ohio, at least for the time being. The State Department of Health is categorizing Ohio's flu activity as very high for the season. Very high flu activity. Department of Health data shows well over 800 flu-related hospitalizations across just central Ohio since October 1st of last year. Public health leaders are reminding residents to stay home when you are sick to avoid spreading illness to others. They also add that flu infections can happen at any time of the year, and getting the latest vaccination is the best way to remain healthy. So let's not forget that it is still flu season, even though it certainly doesn't feel like it this morning. And yesterday was absolutely gorgeous. Oh my God. I don't know if we got to the mid-70s yesterday, but it was almost shorts weather. There were a few people walking around the neighborhood yesterday in shorts. I wasn't quite there yet, but I understand. Motorcycle weather and all of that. Watch out for the two-wheelers on the roads. You know the drill this time of year. So, you know, the other thing is we're getting into the heart of tax season now. And if you are putting off filing, if you are one of those procrastinators, researchers at The Ohio State University have some tips on getting yourself in gear for this. They asked 232 adults about their tax filing habits, researchers at OSU, and those who connected negatively to taxes tended to file later, which, of course, raises the question for me, the first question, who does not connect negatively to taxes? I mean, who looks forward to this? Those who connected negatively to taxes tended to file later. Yeah. Researchers found that participants who focused on negative aspects of a situation were more likely to put off tasks in general. Now, that I can understand. If you generally associate a task with its negative connotations, then you're not going to be eager to take up that task, whatever it is. And that certainly applies to taxes. However, it is possible, they say, to switch a negative stance to, if not a positive one, at least a neutral stance on something like filing taxes. People with a more positive outlook might be less likely to procrastinate, but double-check your answers. A positive bias, they say, the downside here is that it can lead to overconfidence, and that can lead to errors in completing said task, if you are overconfident about your ability to complete the task. And when it comes to your taxes, you don't want to be too overconfident. So it is best to be more objectively balanced than to be at either extreme, according to the researchers. So there you go. The month of March is National Women's Month. I don't know if you knew that or not, but just in time for National Women's Month, the folks at Wallet Hub are out with their survey of the best and worst states for women. I really love Wallet Hub's data surveys because they generally do a really deep dive into the data and statistics here. I mean, they don't just, it's not subjective. They have a long list of criteria that they use in creating their rankings for whatever they are ranking. They do a lot of rankings. So they looked at quality of life and opportunities, adversities in the workplace, and all kinds of objective data here in their ranking. Factors like economic well-being, healthcare, safety, and social well-being were all considered. Massachusetts came out number one with their first place healthcare and safety rankings. Massachusetts number one overall. The District of Columbia came in second, ranked highly in terms of economic and social well-being. The worst states for women, according to WalletHub, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. Those were the bottom five states. Women in the U.S., according to Cassandra Hoppe of WalletHub, women in the U.S. still face a lot of adversity, so living in the right state can greatly impact quality of life. And Ohio, if you're interested, ranked 26th overall. So firmly in the middle. I don't know if that's good. I guess it's on how you look at it, but Ohio ranked 26th overall, not at the top or at the bottom. So. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day to get your Tuesday morning started. You know, Stanley tumblers are all the rage and have been for quite some time now. Have you gotten onto this bandwagon, these Stanley tumblers? I don't get it myself, but it's just the latest in a long... It seems whatever the designer product of the day, whatever is trendy, becomes hot, it sells out. People are going nuts over these Stanley tumblers. As a matter of fact, the Stanley company, to combat scalping of these things, people are scooping these up when they come available on the stores and then reselling them online at a huge markup. And to combat this, the company, Stanley, has tasked another company with handling the launch of their new chocolate gold quencher tumbler. It's the same cup as every other Stanley tumbler. It's just brown. But they call it the chocolate gold quencher. And the ad copy sounds like something that you would see at Tiffany's. The cup comes beautifully packaged in an ornate chocolate box that features nostalgic stripes and gold detail and boasts a rich ganache powder coat finish, they say. Well, no wonder these things are... I mean, they are hiring a company to bust the scalpers, but they're contributing to it just by playing it up like this. But I guess, you know, that's what companies do. They're trying to make their products trendy and the thing that everyone has to have. And it's certainly been working. But again, it's a big brown cup. The bottom line, it is a big brown cup. Anyway, for those who just have to have it, interested parties now have to send an email for the chance, just a chance to purchase one. Sending an email does not guarantee it. It gives you the chance to purchase one, and orders are limited to one apiece. One of our priorities, they say, is to prevent automated bots and resellers from depleting the stock meant for our genuine fans, the company says. By the way, if you look on eBay, you can see the Stanley Cups, which normally go for like $50, selling for $350 or more. It's crazy. But that's the latest if you just have to have it. This is kind of crazy. A couple of food-related items here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Ronald Gorski. He lives in Wisconsin. And he has officially eaten now 34,128 Big Macs in his lifetime. 34,128. And if you're thinking, that sounds like an oddly specific number to put out there, how does he know that he has eaten precisely 34,128? Why? Because he has saved every single McDonald's receipt that he has... has ever gotten. Apparently, Mr. Gorski began his burger binge on May 17th, 1972. And he says he's been in love with the Big Mac since his first bite. In that very moment, he said, I'm going to eat these for the rest of my life. He knew it from the very first bite. And he has. He says, while I used to eat about 9 sandwiches a day, 9 a day, he's a little older now, so these days he consumes about 2 a day. However, he has still not tired of them. People have watched me eating a Big Mac often comment that I look like I'm eating one for the very first time, he said. And he has counted up his receipts. It's 34,128. By the way, did we mention it is not only Women's Month, it is National Nutrition Month. So that sounds like an odd story to make headlines, National Nutrition Month. But there you go. And this is kind of crazy. Again, this is sort of in the realm of crazy food items and things like that. I saw this story, and this is how you know that you are too rich. This is how you know that some people are too rich. A company in Greenland has found a way to cater to the super rich in Dubai. And you know, Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, it is sort of the hot spot for the uber rich. I mean, if you are crazy rich, that's where you go. Dubai is the playground of the uber rich. And so this company in Greenland has found a way to cater to that clientele. Arctic Ice is the name of the company. They have made their first shipment of 22 tons of iceberg ice from that country in Greenland to the high-end bars and restaurants in Dubai. According to the company's Instagram, its team scours the fjord near Greenland's capital city to find wayward icebergs that have broken off the ice sheet. This ice, which purportedly is hundreds of thousands of years old and said to be untouched by pollution, is then scanned for microorganisms and bacteria, and then once it's cleared, is shipped by refrigerated cargo ships to the city of Dubai, where instead of just melting into the ocean, it will help chill the drinks of the uber rich. Now, I don't know how much this costs, but I can imagine that it ain't cheap. But that's how you know that some people are just far too rich, when you have pure iceberg ice from Greenland chilling your drink. I dream of one day being able to afford that. Not that I would. I just want to be able to afford to do that. Wow. That's just, some people have too much money. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. A chance of showers and storms today, a high around 70. Showers tonight, a low in the mid-40s. A big name that was in Columbus over the weekend has joined the effort to end gerrymandering in Ohio.
A push to change the Ohio Redistricting Commission. Right now, it's made up of 3 statewide office holders and 4 state lawmakers. Arnold Schwarzenegger joined the effort for the amendment. Schwarzenegger says he helped create an independent redistricting commission in California and thinks all states should follow.
They draw it in such a way that there is very conservative districts and very liberal districts, but there's no in between.
Citizens Not Politicians has until July to submit their signatures to get that amendment on the ballot in November. Reporting in the studio, Tara Jabor.
Children's Mentoring Connection of Hancock County is putting on their Bowling for Kids fundraiser this month. And Stacy Shaw on with WFIN's Chris Oaks says there's a twist this year.
Our twist on that is to have glow bowling this year. And so we are going to be bowling under the black lights. So we have special t-shirts that we're going to have that our t-shirt sponsor is Marathon this year. And so we're going to have neon t-shirts.
Stacy says you can participate by becoming a sponsor, creating a team, registering as a player, or making a donation. Get more on the Children's Mentoring Connection of Hancock County's Bowling for Kids fundraiser in the story on our website. Ohio's primary election is in 2 weeks.
One of the biggest contests they'll be deciding is who will be the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate. Three candidates want the GOP nod to face three-term incumbent Democrat Sherrod Brown in November. They are State Senator Matt Dolan, Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose, and businessman Bernie Moreno.
I'm Doug Petcast.
The Hancock Historical Museum's next monthly Brown Bag Lecture is titled Police Vehicles Through the Decades, and will be presented by Tom Davis, a third-generation public servant and retired detective sergeant of the Findlay Police Department. The lecture will be held on Thursday at noon at the Hancock Historical Museum at 422 West Sandusky Street in Findlay. Get more information on the lecture in the story on our website, and you can also see a picture of a new sheriff's auxiliary car from 1956. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Our cover story this morning, we are talking cryptocurrency because it had a huge week last week. Bitcoin was up more than 3% for the week to just over $62,000 on the final day of February, capping its strongest month in more than 3 years. At one point, it was as high as $64,000. And even though being up more than 3% last week doesn't sound like a whole lot, Bitcoin was up a total of 47% for the month. Now, crypto is known for its volatility. I mean, some wild swings, both up and down. But this was Bitcoin's sixth straight month of gains. 6 months in a row, it's gone up. So this appears to be something of a trend. So what is the reason for this huge run-up in prices? And does this mean it is time for average investors to jump on the crypto bandwagon, or at least take a closer look? Investing in cryptocurrency, of course, is not new. Sometimes it makes headlines for its sometimes jaw-dropping returns, and alternatively, for the analysts who dismiss it as a flash in the pan, or worse, an outright scam. But many analysts point to the recent spike being the result of the SEC's recent approval of 11 spot Bitcoin ETFs, or exchange-traded funds, which has opened the door for everyday investors to explore the world of cryptocurrency with the comfort of the markets that they are already familiar with. John Hoffman joins us now. He is head of distribution and partnerships at Grayscale, which is the world's largest crypto manager. John, let's start with the very basics. What is a spot Bitcoin ETF, and what are the benefits of investing in Bitcoin in the first place?
Yeah, so Chris, thanks. It's a great question. It's spot Bitcoin ETF. A lot of financial jargon there. So let's break that down for a bit. Spot refers to the current market price. Bitcoin is the world's largest cryptocurrency, with over $1 trillion in assets. It's also, as you pointed out, the oldest cryptocurrency. It's been in the market since 2009, so 15 years now of live, continuous network running. And then the third part there was ETF, another financial jargon term, which is an exchange-traded fund. These have been around since the 1990s, and they are a pooled investment vehicle that hold a basket or a bundle of securities, and they trade on exchange like a stock. So when you put those three things together, spot, Bitcoin, ETF, these are exchange-traded funds that hold Bitcoin. And again, you made it a comment in your opening remarks there, making it easier, simple, convenient to buy or invest in Bitcoin directly from your brokerage account, just like you'd buy or sell shares of common stock.
So we mentioned, what are the benefits to investing in cryptocurrency in the first place? Now, I know a lot of folks like the idea that cryptocurrency, particularly Bitcoin, is not tied to any government. But aside from that, what are the benefits?
Sure. So, you know, I think investors today are thinking about two things. One is performance as it relates to crypto and Bitcoin. And the second is diversification. So on the performance topic, Bitcoin, which is a cryptocurrency, has been the best performing asset in the world over the last 10 years. So looking backward, it's had very, very strong performance. The second topic is diversification, which is another fancy financial term that really refers to correlation, which really refers to how assets move together or don't move together.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin has historically had low correlation to stocks, bonds, commodities, real estate. So it tends to behave differently. So when added to a portfolio, it has historically provided these diversification benefits.
Although some would say that could be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you look at it, it makes it very difficult to predict.
Absolutely. And, we encourage people to think about investing over long periods of time. That's a very important piece here. Cryptocurrency, as you pointed out, it's new. It's been around for 15 years. It's been volatile, which means the price goes up and down. But we encourage investors to think about this over long periods of time and as a small part of the portfolio. So I think those are two things that need to be together. Long periods of time, small part of the portfolio. And we encourage you to work with a financial professional when you're developing a strategy.
Now, we mentioned that you can buy into these ETFs with the comfort of the markets that we already know and trust, the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ. But here's the big question. Does that really give investors a greater trust in these mysterious investments, or is it just the illusion of trust?
So I think we need to kind of take a step back and think about what this actually does, right? So it's an exchange-traded fund, which is that wrapper, that bundling of underlying securities. There's ETFs that hold stocks. There's ETFs that hold bonds that trade on, as you mentioned, the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ, the mm-hmm. Chicago Board of Options Exchange. In this example, the ETF is holding Bitcoin, making it easier to invest in this asset class. The other piece is the safekeeping of those assets. So in this example, the ETF actually holds Bitcoin. So rather than you having to have a crypto wallet or download a crypto wallet or safekeep this on your own hard drive, this provides a way to do this in the traditional markets through your brokerage account in this wrapper that is going to hold Bitcoin directly and seeks to safekeep that as well.
And this is starting to get something of a track record. Again, over the past few years, there have been some analysts who have kind of dismissed this as a flash in the pan. It's in a few years saying it's not going to be worth anything. You certainly are starting to see a track record here that you didn't have a few years ago.
Yeah, we're 15 years in now. It's a new technology. Technology takes time for people to understand. I remember when I first used the internet, and dialed up on a modem and connected to the internet. And there were all of these, I had to actually download AOL or Prodigy to
right.
a CD that came in the mail. And there were a lot of terms that I had never heard of before. And it was scary and daunting. Flash forward 30 years and the internet is ubiquitous. If I were to ask somebody where the Wi-Fi is, they would know what I'm talking about.
Right.
There's a lot of new words here. There's a lot of new things to learn. And that takes time. And so, again, even 15 years later, the internet took 30 years, 40 years to kind of get to this mainstreaming topic. And so, again, although it's 15 years, kind of a long time from a time perspective, it's still very, very early. And we see that there's a tremendous amount of education that still needs to happen. But as we fast forward to the future, we think that this technology is really going to change the way that people live, the way they play, the way they work.
And I want to ask you about this too, real quickly. Talk about throwing a lot of terms at people. Here's another one. There is something called GBTC. What is that and how is it different than what we've been talking about to this point?
So GBTC is the Grayscale Bitcoin ETF.
Okay.
It is traded on an exchange and it actually holds Bitcoin. So if you think about the price of Bitcoin, between $40,000 or $60,000, depending at the point in time, GBTC, you can buy or invest in your brokerage account and get a slice of Bitcoin. So, for example, the price of GBTC, depending on the point in time, could be between $40,000 or $50,000. And you could buy as little as one share of GBTC and therefore get a piece or a little fraction of Bitcoin. And so it's investing directly in Bitcoin through this ETF wrapper.
Gotcha. Again, John Hoffman is head of distribution and partnerships at Grayscale, the world's largest crypto manager, about these new spot Bitcoin ETFs and the different ways to invest in cryptocurrency today. Where do we get more information?
So I invite you to visit www.grayscale.com. That's GRAYscale.com. You can read more about GBTC, the world's largest Bitcoin ETF. You can also learn more about cryptocurrency and this technology, and you can subscribe to our research through that website as well, www.grayscale.com.
John Hoffman, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here, Chris.
So last week, Mayor Christina Mern delivered her annual State of the City address. It came just a day before we learned that Findlay had once again been named America's top micropolitan community for the 10th straight year. Yesterday, we spoke to Mayor Mern via Zoom for a recap of the state of the city and to get her reaction to the Findlay decade of economic development success. First of all, thanks for carving out some time for us, because I know it is a very busy week that you have ahead.
My pleasure.
Unlike the president's State of the Union speech, the State of the City is more of a PowerPoint presentation, and we have those we have those slides posted on the WFIN news page. A lot of data there for anyone who might be interested. What are the key points that you want folks to take away from the State of the City?
Yes, not nearly as much sitting down, clapping and booing, you know, all that. We try to keep ours low drama. So, you know, the big thing is there's a lot of great things going on in the city of Findlay. Certainly the last year, we've implemented a number of changes as we look at our capital planning, obviously moving forward with flood mitigation as well as the downtown recreation area. But I think we really hit on the broad scope of all of the operational performance that the city departments do each and every day. There's about 370 employees that are working hard to keep our community functioning and running really well, from the airport, water, sewer, streets, parking, income tax. All those different departments do a lot of great work. Some of the highlights, as we look at this year, we're going to continue to try to get investment into the mall property, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll have some announcements there. The 9975 interchange will break ground. They're doing utility work out there right now. Probably in April we'll start construction for the reconfiguration there. Obviously work on preparing the Sheets infrastructure for that site development. Mm-hmm. Planting trees throughout the community. In 2025, we're going to have a collegiate summer league baseball team starting. So hopefully people saw in my presentation that we focus a lot on internal operations. But as mayor, you know, the city is involved in a lot of different things and hoping to continue to spur investment and make sure that Findlay is a great place for businesses and citizens to invest and put down roots.
You noted that your biggest challenge in running the city isn't so much in running the city, but in leading a city of ever-growing diversity, not just ethnically, but politically, socially, and the diverse vision of what the community should be. This has kind of come up repeatedly in recent months. Why do you believe that is?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the main reasons I mentioned it is, as mayors, we work, and as I, you know, talk to mayor friends across the country, we're representative and working on behalf of all of the citizens of Findlay. And obviously, we were elected by a certain population, and not everyone's going to agree with things that we have to do to keep our city moving forward. And, you know, around the world and nationally, and it's trickled down locally, that people are more divisive and negative. And so I think it's just really important to note that, you know, I hear people's voices. I recognize that we have to do things that work for all people in our community. And, you know, obviously the immigration topic and homelessness is something that we've talked quite a bit about over the last couple of years and continues to be a big challenge. both societally and locally. And as I look at it, those are tough challenges to work on. But I think the important, you know, message that I shared was that we're going to be able to address them together, and it's not going to be a quick, easy fix. These are things where, you know, people have severe mental health issues or a drug addiction, or are, you know, don't recognize the problem of living on the streets. And immigration reform is necessary at the federal level. Border security is necessary at the federal level. Those are not things that I control here locally. But I think the message on that topic was that the people in our community are largely here legally. We continue to address it and make sure that, you know, folks aren't committing crimes, and that if somebody is here illegally and, you know, is a threat to the public, they're detained appropriately. Fortunately, we haven't seen that. And I think that the national rhetoric obviously trickles down to our local communities, but that's not necessarily the scenario that we have playing out. And I think all of our citizens need to recognize that just because somebody looks different or speaks different doesn't mean that we shouldn't treat them as a good neighbor.
One thing that didn't make it into the speech, because we learned about it at the end of the week last week, was the designation of top micropolitan area in the country for the 10th year in a row. Cat's out of the bag now. What was your reaction when you heard that news?
Yeah, so I've known for a little while, and it always is hard to keep a secret, but certainly important. You know, I'm really proud. It's not something that we count on, but it's something that we just continue to do what we know is right for our community and seeking investment. And I think the largest message when we look at, you know, being recognized as top micropolitan by Site Selection Magazine, once again, is that the majority of growth is coming from our existing businesses. And that tells me that we are creating a really good investment, you know, area for businesses to invest, and that we have good policies, good procedures, that we are in an area where people see opportunity. And that's a really good message to continue to tell. And I look forward to continuing to spread that message wide and far, and make sure that Findlay is getting investment and attracting businesses and continuing to be a great community.
When we spoke with Dan Schaefer about this, economic development director, he was very careful, very deliberate not to come out and say that this is the goal to retain this title again next year and for as long as possible. So I will ask you, do you view this as an explicit goal moving forward?
No. I would agree with Dan's assessment. It's not a specific goal. Obviously, we want appropriate development for our community, but I think it is a measure of how we are performing against our peers, and, you know, that we're doing good things, that we're supporting our businesses, and it's an added benefit when we get it. But I think it's something that we can really be proud of, but it's not an explicit goal.
One of the things that Dan did say, and you just kind of touched on it as well, and I thought it was kind of interesting, was that because of our success, we are now in a position where we can focus on the right type of growth for the city. We can actually say no to projects that don't fit into our vision and what we are trying to do here. I take it you would agree with that assessment. And what are the right types of growth?
Yeah, so I would first of all say that that is something we have been doing. We definitely don't submit for every project that comes across, you know, economic development's table, and the city, you know, is aware of the majority of those, and sometimes says, you know what, that's not the right type of development for our community. So that certainly has been something we have done and will continue to do. I think that we have tried to diversify our economy and played to our strengths and sought investment, and we've seen that. I think by having this recognition, it definitely positions us to try to, it helps leverage our story with businesses that we may have a stronger desire to have in our community. It continues to say, listen, it's not just something that we say we can do. It's something that we have the track record to be able to do, that we are going to be able to support your business, that will get you up and running quickly, that we have a low cost environment, that we'll be able to bring local resources, and that we'll be able to get you talent. Those, I think, are all really key things that we've been saying, and now continuing to have that track record under our belt, I think just bolsters that message.
We mentioned, we appreciate you taking some time to join us because it is a busy week for you. You actually are out of town for a couple of days. It's another mayor's group meeting this week. Give us some details on this, because this one was a new one that I hadn't heard before.
Yeah. So the right now I am participating in the Yale Mayor's College and CEO Summit. And I have participated in this the last 5 years, and it's a really great group. So Yale pays for mayors across the country. There's typically 20 to 30 of us that are brought together. And we have one afternoon is probably 5 hours of just a roundtable discussion on different topics that are pertinent at that point in time. This week, we're talking about election integrity, continued divisiveness in politics, immigration and border security, homelessness. Those are kind of the main thing.
Touching on many of the topics that we were just talking about that we're facing locally.
Yep. And then the next day, we bring in the CEO Summit, which is typically 50, sometimes more CEOs from across the country of, top organizations. And we have another conversation around different topics that are pertinent to them. This one is focused really on the economy, global conflict, and elections. Over half the Democratic world is having elections this year, and that obviously really has a big impact on business operations and the global economy. So we're going to have individuals speaking to us like Jake Sullivan, National Security Advisor, as well as ambassadors to the U.S. from countries like Bahrain, UAE, Qatar, Israel, and a couple of others. So, I'm honored to continue to get to participate in these conversations. I think it's really important that have kind of my voice on how do we see, but also be in the room to listen to CEOs, what they're thinking, what they're seeing, because obviously the economy has a huge impact on all of our communities, no matter if we have that large corporation or not. So I've really enjoyed participating in it the last 5 years and look forward to the conversations this week.
Again, Findlay Mayor Christina Mern with us this morning. Mayor Mern, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. My pleasure.
So in case you missed it, yesterday evening we held the last of our candidate forums ahead of the primary coming up here in a couple of weeks, featuring this time the Hancock County Commissioner candidates, Jeff Wobser, Jeff Hunker, and Holly Frischi. It was a lively conversation, and we spent a great deal of time talking about county facilities, including the question of whether there is actually a need for a new jail facility. And more immediately, what happens when the new building to house the probate and juvenile court is completed? Here is some of that exchange last night.
When it is fully operational, it will bring up the question of what to do with the current building that houses the probate and juvenile court. What do you believe should be done with that facility once it is vacated? And for this one, we'll start with Mr. Wobser.
I think that building, much like the situation with the jail, is kind of a multi-leg issue. You've got to look at the historic value of that, although there's only a really small portion of that building that is historic. The rest of it was added on to over time. Does it serve a better purpose in a historic value? There will be a group of people in our community that I guarantee you will step up and will want to see that remain there for that specific reason. Or is that land better utilized for something else? For instance, could it be a parking garage? Boy, kind of hate to say that from the standpoint of taking a historic building and turning it into a parking lot. But I think it's going to take a lot of conversation. There's no easy answers to that. Much like the jail, it's going to take a lot of conversation and discussion amongst all the different groups. We've got issues that we'll have to continue to look at. It's going to be a beautiful building. It's going to serve a great purpose. But we know we've got parking issues that are coming with that.
Mr. Hunker.
Unlike Mr. Wobser, I don't see that as a difficult decision. That building, knowing the county's budget and all the needs that the county has right now, and the budget being tight as it has been. I mean, right now there's some surplus there, but there are going to be needs and cost with this new building. Anytime you build new, as many of the schools have found out, it's not cheap to run a new building. So my decision, my vote, is that the building comes down. I honestly see the value, I see the architectural beauty of it, But there comes a time when you have to make tough decisions. And in my eyes, and having what I think is an understanding of the budget, I think there's a lot more higher priorities than that, honestly. So I see the building coming down.
And Ms. Frischi.
Well, I don't see the building coming down per se. I think we are still in those discussions of having a parking plan, a downtown plan, and how we're going to operate together with the city. With that being said, there's still use for a lot of those buildings. I would love to see the county work together with the city because we are limited on our space in the municipal building, and there could be some needs there. I think parking is a separate discussion from that, and I don't think we should jump too quickly to think tear it down, make it parking.
Which brings us to the next big question when it comes to county facilities. You have all brought up the needs of the Hancock County Jail, both tonight and during your campaigns. During our forum last week, however, the Hancock County Sheriff candidates all downplayed the need for a new jail. When asked, they did not cite that as an immediate or desperate need. So we'll ask you, from your perspective, how significant of a priority do you view this to be? And we'll begin with Mr. Wolpser.
The jail situation is a multi-tentacled monster. We have the current jail, which needs upgrading. It's 30 years old. We've spent quite a bit of money on maintenance on it. It's going to cost us a lot of money going forward. And to get it up to speed, it's going to cost quite a bit. But we don't know what that cost is yet versus building new. There's a lot of people that think that building out on 140 is the best place to be. That may be the case. But the fact of the matter is we don't know yet what that is. Right now, the jail is about 70% capacity. That's for a couple of different reasons. Number one, the city took their business elsewhere. Part of the reason that the city no longer houses inmates there is because of the cost. The daily cost is cheaper to go someplace else. And also there was a period of time when staffing, which is still a problem with the corrections officers, the sheriff asked us to move our people out, which we did, and we've just chose not to come back at this point. The city has not. So there's a lot of things that are going to go into the decision to make that jail. It's a very expensive proposition, somewhere between $90 and $150 million. It is not going to be an easy decision, and that will be one, if we go forward, that will have to require almost every bit, every person in our elected government to be involved in that, to have their input so that we do the right thing.
Mr. Hunker.
Though I feel that a jail is needed, based on my knowledge, my experience walking through the jail personally, my experience talking to individuals that work daily in the jail, ultimately, that's a decision that's a community decision. I serve on the Community Action Committee studying potential new jail. There will be an upcoming recommendation coming out soon. That committee has worked very diligently to come up with answers. But let me be clear. Currently, I see no path moving forward with the Justice Center under the current financials in the Hancock County budget. Therefore, the judges, the sheriff's office, police department, other elected officials are going to have to work together, try to come up with something. And there needs to be open and honest discussion. And based on the decision that comes down, that decision will be from the citizens of Hancock County before a vote. And it may be a ways away, but that's the way it has to proceed.
Ms. Frischi.
The jail is a big discussion. It's multifaceted. We're going to have a new sheriff in town. I'm excited for that. Any of the three candidates, it's going to be great. We're going to see a lot of things going on. And the first thing we're going to have to figure out is staffing the jail, improving our road workers and so forth, our deputies. And then we have to talk about where we want the jail to go and what the community wants the jail to be. Do we want it to be in downtown? Do we want it to be on 140? Are we willing to pay for that tax increase to get it done? But we are maintaining that jail. We are doing maintenance to that building as we speak. So we're not ignoring the facility and letting it crumble. So I think that is important to know as well.
Part of the conversation last night with the Hancock County Commissioner candidates, Jeff Wobser, Jeff Hunker, and Holly Frischi, ahead of the primary here in a couple of weeks. The last of our candidate forums was held last night at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. And we will note that that segment that you just heard was edited for time somewhat, but you can view the entire candidate forum, the hour-long discussion. Like we said, it was a lively discussion at times, and you can view it online at WFIN.com and also at goodmornings.net. We have the link posted to the video if you want to hear the complete or view the complete, not just hear, but view the complete forum with the candidates from our Facebook and YouTube channels. And we thank all of the candidates who joined us for all of the forums that we held this election season. Again, you can learn more at goodmornings.net.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
This has one to be, I imagine, going to be one of the more unusual drug seizures at an airport. It happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where County Sheriff's Department, I misspoke. I don't know that it was necessarily an airport. It was a package sent from Columbia to Kenosha County, Wisconsin, over the weekend. It arrived on Saturday. Authorities seized a pair of rollerblades infused with cocaine. I just thought that was weird. Says suspicious package headed from Columbia to Kenosha, Wisconsin. Customs and Border Patrol tested the rollerblades for the presence of illegal drugs. The wheels were infused with a gelatin-like substance that tested positive for the presence of cocaine, according to the Sheriff's Department. Discovery of the rollerblades resulted in a search warrant, which led police to 1,000 grams of cocaine. Authorities say the investigation is ongoing. Stashed in rollerblades. I just thought, of all things, I guess you got to be on the lookout always. That's kind of crazy. Some of the odd and unusual stories from the headlines this morning, today's broken news. Here's another case of your heart was in the right place, but occasionally you get these mistaken identity stories. Animal rescuers in the UK, animal rescuers and Good Samaritans struggled to save a dog trapped in a ditch only to find out that it was a statue. Cleethorpes Wildlife Rescue in the UK. Isn't it crazy how everything in the UK has some sort of regal name to it? Cleethorpes Wildlife Rescue in the UK received multiple reports of a pup stuck in the mud. Upon responding to the call, animal lovers found the dog was actually a 2-foot-tall statue of a Cocker Spaniel. The rescue organization posted on social media, "Thank you to those who reported with good intent. And thank you to our water rescue volunteers for their immediate response, on scene and ready to go in less than 20 minutes. They were ready to rescue that statue." Local residents obviously expressing their relief that it was just a dog statue and not an actual dog. But everybody responded to save the dog. It's the thought that counts, I guess. A fundraising event at an Oklahoma high school is going viral after kids licked peanut butter off the feet of fellow students. Now, there's a sentence I never thought I would say. A fundraising event at an Oklahoma high school is going viral after kids licked peanut butter off the feet of fellow students. Apparently, this happened at Deer Creek High School outside of Oklahoma City, where kids licked peanut butter off the feet of their fellow students. The Oklahoma Superintendent of Schools is now vowing an investigation, calling the event filthy. It's a filthy spectacle. The school released a statement saying the students involved had signed up for the fundraiser. They knew what they were getting into. And they do point out that it brought in more than $152,000 for a coffee shop that employs individuals with developmental disorders. So, I mean, it was for a good cause, but I'm not sure that that completely exonerates the organizers of this particular fundraiser. Licking the feet, licking peanut butter on the feet of fellow students. I'm not sure that I want to be the licker or the lickee. I'm not sure that I want to have peanut butter spread all over my feet. Not to be outdone, a school in eastern Washington state is coming under fire after encouraging students to dress up as slaves. This was at Wilson Elementary School in Spokane, Washington. They made the suggestion on Friday in a flyer highlighting an upcoming jazz music performance. I would say file this under the category of seemed like a good idea at the time, but I don't know if this seemed like a good idea at the time. I want to know who greenlighted this. Who greenlighted the flyer invited families to, quote, take a trip back in time, way back to the times of slavery in America, and went on to suggest that students dress up either as slaves or hobos for the concert. Who gave this the green light? Who saw this and said, yeah, that's a good idea? Let's do that. The spokesperson for the public schools says an investigation into the incident is ongoing. I would hope so. Let's see here. And a couple of other items in the broken news this morning. You know that police work can be a crappy job sometimes, and that was literally the case for officers in Lakewood, Colorado. When police confronted a suspect while he was on the John. He was doing his business when confronted by police. According to a report from the Lakewood Police Department, officers responded to a burglary alarm that went off in the wee hours of the morning last Thursday, and they arrested the alleged thief while he was using the bathroom. So much is crazy about this. I mean, confronting the thief on the John and the fact that the thief had to stop to relieve himself before making getaway. Well, when you gotta go, you gotta go, I guess. According to the police department report, we see a lot of things in the line of duty, but we had no clue what awaited us this time. They actually posted body cam video of the suspect getting up from the John and walking out of the bathroom with his hands up and his pants down. The suspect was taken to jail after pulling his pants up and is being held on charges of second-degree burglary. And first-degree stupidity. Stop to relieve yourself before making your getaway. Alrighty. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is actually a story with a happy ending, but it was a long time in coming. British authorities have recovered a Formula One Ferrari that was stolen in 1995. The vehicle belonged to Gerhard Berger, and it was stolen in Italy while he was in town for the San Marino Grand Prix. Gerhard Berger, a Formula One driver, and this was his personal Ferrari, which was stolen while he was in Italy for the Grand Prix there. London police were tipped off that a Ferrari purchased by an American buyer had been flagged as stolen. It was set to be sent overseas to an American buyer, but it was flagged as stolen. So they've now recovered it. They've recovered the car, but no arrests have been made in connection with the stolen vehicle from almost 30 years ago now. The vehicle, valued at $444,000, and can reach a top speed of 196 miles an hour. Wow. There you go. At least he's got his car back, but still no word on who stole it and whether they'll ever be brought to justice. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Do you know an exceptional teacher who's made a positive impact in your life or the life of a student? It's time to shine a bright spotlight on these educational heroes with the Findlay Rotary Golden Apple Awards. Nominate your favorite teacher from Findlay or Hancock County online at findlayrotary.org before April 5th. Nominate an outstanding educator for the Golden Apple Awards. Make a difference. Honor a teacher by visiting findlayrotary.org today. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The 96th Annual Academy Awards will be handed out this Sunday. And the numbers for Hollywood's Biggest Night are truly jaw-dropping. The cost of putting on the Oscars ceremony on Sunday, $56.9 million. That's how much will be spent putting on the big show. The red carpet alone, the 50,000 square foot red carpet on which the celebrities will stride to get to the ceremony, takes 18 rolls to complete and costs by itself $24,700. Takes 18 workers 600 hours to roll out and get just right. It's a big deal to win Best Actor or Best Actress, not just for the prestige, but because those winners can see a 20% boost in average in terms of pay for their next acting gig, which is handy because a pair of tickets to the Oscar party reportedly costs $100,000. Now, when you break it all down, the economic impact to the Los Angeles area, the city of Los Angeles, sees a $170 million economic boost from the Oscars. So it is a big deal in Hollywood. By the way, the average cost of the women's outfit, because the women especially get all doled up for this, designer dresses and jewelry and all of that, the average A-list actress getup is worth $10 million. Although, for a first-timer to the ceremony, the average is $266,000. So there are A-listers, and then there are the rest of them. But even at $266,000, now, a lot of times, the actresses don't own those gowns or that incredible jewelry. They're on loan from places like Tiffany's and the designers who want to get their designs out there to be seen. But still, it is an awful lot of money floating around when it comes to the Oscars. Well, March is National Nutrition Month, and joining us this morning with what you need to elevate your nutrition and wellness routines in the months ahead is nationally known registered dietitian nutritionist Mia Sin. Mia, this really is perfect timing because, of course, we're coming up on the spring and summer months when we all become more active again. We're also 2 full months on from all of those New Year's resolutions, so a good time to maybe take stock of where we have fallen short, perhaps. So March really is the perfect time for all of this.
Yes, I totally agree. It's the perfect time. Spring's right around the corner, and it's a great time to just clean up your eating habits, and so I have some great tips today.
Just like we're doing our spring cleaning in our homes and our garage and everything else, we're going to spring clean your nutrition habits here and wellness routines. Obviously, we know that when it comes to getting the proper nutrition and the essential nutrients that we need, there is no shortage of options out there. So how do we ensure that we are getting what our body needs every day?
Yes. Well, one simple way to do that is to incorporate a high quality supplement. And Nature Made just introduced their advanced multivitamin gummies. They offer 20 essential nutrients and are a good source of magnesium, calcium, and all 8 B vitamins to help consumers get more out of their multivitamin. They're an easy, effective, and enjoyable way to bridge those common dietary gaps. They come in 3 varieties: for her, for him, and for adults, and are available online at naturemade.com and Walmart, as well as in stores at Walmart, and will be rolling out to additional retailers nationally in the coming months.
Now, we've all also heard that it's important to boost our protein intake. Talk a little bit about why that is important and what are some healthy, nutritious options of incorporating more protein into our diets.
Yes, protein is an essential macronutrient. It helps us stay fuller longer. It's important for muscle maintenance and repair. And with this year's Lent and Easter season coinciding with National Nutrition Month, it's really a great opportunity for people to turn to proteins like salmon for their meals, which is a delicious source of those good omega-3 fats important for brain and heart health. And Mowi Atlantic Farm-Raised Salmon is fresh, never frozen. It's freshly processed and packed with care and high standards, utilizing skin pack technology, which allows the product to breathe out, but nothing to breathe in. And this technology extends the shelf life of the product while keeping it fresh and tasty and allows it to be available at stores or online in as little as 24 hours. And it comes in different sizes and preparations. So there's a 12-ounce fillet, sweet bourbon, Tuscan herb. It's even available with its very own plank, which is perfect for the barbecue.
Now, obviously, a big part of a healthy diet is the proper amounts of fruits and vegetables. So for those who are looking to incorporate more fruits and veggies into their diets without sacrificing convenience, because that is what holds some people back. They think, oh, this is going to be complicated. What are the options that you can recommend there?
I'm a big fan of convenience, and that's why I love the Bird's Eye vegetables, because they've done all the prep work for you with their steam fresh vegetables. So you can store these in the freezer, cook them in the microwave, and they're ready to enjoy in minutes. Their vegetables are picked at peak ripeness, then flash frozen to lock in those key nutrients, and they have no artificial ingredients, flavors, or colors. So whether it's the broccoli florets or sweet peas, they're a versatile addition to any meal, and you can find them out retailers nationwide. And then for those seeking a little more variety, Daily Harvest has a range of plant-based options that are so delicious. There's smoothies, pops, harvest bowls, grains, pastas, and bites, all made with farm to frozen fruits and vegetables and over 200 unique ingredients with no gluten, dairy, artificial sugar, gums, and GMOs. Really convenient way to enjoy nutritious meals without the hassle of prep, from sweet to savory, breakfast to dinner, even dessert. And all you have to do is heat, blend, or simply open the package to enjoy. And you can find them at dailyharvest.com. You can also use their store locator to find Daily Harvest near you.
And frankly, that is an excellent option for those who are, let's face it, picky eaters. Like myself, I've been told that I'm kind of a picky eater. So there's a perfect way to increase. And for our kids, too, to get them the stuff that they need.
Something for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, nationally recognized registered dietitian nutritionist Mia Sin with us this morning, talking about elevating your nutrition and wellness routines for this National Nutrition Month in March. Where do we get more information, Mia?
For more information, you can head to my website, which is nutritionbymia.com.
Very good. We'll link that up on our webpage as well. Mia, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Blanchard Valley Health System recently announced they will no longer perform open heart surgeries. So why are they calling it an enhancement to cardiac care? Plus, Senator Rob McCauley discusses the significance of SB 215, which he co-sponsored and which recently cleared the state Senate. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, Go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.